You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
The new year is upon us, which means that it's time to start talking about pitchers and catchers reporting to spring training. This is always an exciting time for baseball fans, but especially Giants fans whose team that they root for is in it every year. So let's talk about 2017 with Chris Haft. I'm Allison Footer. Chris, of course, looking ahead to a Giants season is always fun for those Bay Area fans because there's always just such a great foundation. So I guess that's where we need to start talking about is just when you look at the position by position in this pitching staff, it looks like it could be a very, very good season for the Giants.
Oh, very much so. Let's start with Johnny Cueto. Cueto was 18-5 last year. He was the National League All-Star starter. And there's a little wrinkle, added wrinkle entering this year. He can opt out of his contract after 2017. So let's face it. He's probably going to be real motivated to have a really good year. There's more power to him. That's just the way that's the way the contract was set up. That's the way motivation is sometimes. I wouldn't be surprised to see him repeat what he did last year, and who knows? Maybe go on new heights and force the hands of the Giants and all the other teams who need a starting pitcher.
Yeah, it is pretty amazing, isn't it? I mean, it shouldn't be this way, and you can't really, there's no way to put it on paper, why this happens. If you reach the major leagues and you have success, there's a reason for it, and your makeup is just different. Of course, your athletic ability has a lot to do with it. But to have so many guys have these career years right as they're about to hit free agency or now in modern era can hit that opt-out clause. It's not like the work ethic isn't there in other years. Is there a way to explain why they do turn it up a notch or why things just go better for them in these kind of years?
I think in a lot of cases it really is the financial the money incentive. Maybe they work just a little harder conditioning the previous offseason, and or maintaining themselves even during the season. In the case of Johnny Cueto, as you said, he's one of those guys who works hard every day, every year. I don't think, there may be a little, I brought it up. I don't mean to contradict myself. But, there'll be additional incentive for him to excel this year, but it's not as if he wasn't going to go out there trying to win every game otherwise. So,
right.
If another 18-5 season and, the Giants may not be able to hold on to him because he just might say, well, I'm going to see, what back-to-back, strong seasons can do for me on the open market. So, and that's just, the Giants agreed to that deal. So we'll just have to see how that unfolds.
Okay, now the last thing we want to talk about is one of the most important things that the Giants did this offseason, and that was sign Mark Melancon as their closer. I love this move. I love that the three big names that were up on the free agent market in terms of closers that they got Mark. I'm a little biased because I did work with him and when he was an Astro, and he's just a great guy. So Giants fans are going to love him. But that just takes care of so many issues in that bullpen. I know that there are other guys that still have to get out before you get to the ninth inning or the eighth or whenever they decide to put in their closer. But that is such a huge signing. That's really going to help these Giants.
Allison, it's something they knew they needed to do entering the offseason. It was an imperative. They've got, as we mentioned before, they do have an excellent starting staff. It would go to waste without a good closer. They blew a club record 30 saves in 2016. They couldn't let that happen again. And this season has yet to unfold, but there's a really good chance they're not going to blow 30 saves this year with Mark Melancon anchoring that bullpen in the closer role.
Absolutely. Oh, it's going to be a fun year. Okay, Chris, thank you so much. Happy New Year, and we will catch up with you in January. Enjoy the break.
Same to you, and appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Opening day is still a ways away, but it's never too early to talk about the season coming up, even though it's still wintertime for many of our teams. Of course, in Phoenix, it's always lovely out there. So let's talk about the Arizona Diamondbacks. I'm Steve Gilbert. I'm Allison Sutter. Steve, okay, 2017 has to be better. I feel like every year I feel pretty good about the Diamondbacks, and then at the end of the year I feel pretty silly for feeling pretty good about the Diamondbacks. But I don't know. I think, like, if things go well for them this upcoming season, it could be, I don't know, somewhat significant. I don't think they're going to win the division. But how do you see the team sort of shaping up right now?
You know, I have to agree with you, Allison. It's one of those things where, you know, there was a lot of optimism last year, and it went very, very wrong. But there's still a lot of talent. And I think, you know, when you talk to Mike Hazen at the winter meeting in December, he said, you know, yeah, they had offers to maybe trade some of their core players and do a wholesale rebuild. But when he took a look at the roster and took a look at the individual guys, there's a lot of talent on that roster. And for whatever reason, it didn't work out last year. But they're hoping and kind of banking on the fact that with, you know, some better defense in the outfield and some of the young pitchers maturing and Greinke having more of a Greinke year and Shelby Miller not being just as bad as he was last year, which was pretty unexplainable, that this team can bounce back and can, whether or not it, you know, like you said, win the division or not, is certainly up for debate, but could certainly be competitive this coming season, which is not usually what you're saying about a team that lost, 93 games and it hasn't made any real significant moves.
Yeah, that's amazing. When you say 93 losses, that's mind-boggling because it kind of means that they never had, like, a nice stretch. They never really got it together, which could, yeah, it could be a precursor for things that may not go well again if you're not really, you know, shaking things up too much. But I think, like, it can't be overstated that Zach Greinke has to be way, way, way better. I mean, just for any of this to work even long-term with the money that they're paying him, and they're never going to be able to really, like, have a payroll that can really handle his salary and also spread the wealth, I guess you could say, among the rest. So he has to be better than good, or this isn't going to work.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think it can't be overstated, too, that A.J. Pollock played only 12 games last year. And he's a big part of that team, not just offensively, which, we know what he brings to the team offensively, but defensively playing center field. I mean, that was huge for them. There were games last year where they started a catcher and a third baseman and a shortstop in the outfield. And it's just he's a real key part for them. And that outfield defense was a real key part for them in terms of, you know, one of the reasons why the pitcher struggled, certainly not the full explanation for it, but it certainly did not help.
Yeah, so looking at the new management and with Lovello, I mean, he kind of comes into a situation where there will be somewhat of a honeymoon period, but you wonder how long that'll last if they don't get off to a fast start. It kind of puts him in a weird situation because he's going to be a rookie manager and he's going to be, I mean, the expectations are what they are. But that's kind of a lot of pressure, right? To take over something that was like a disaster. And like you said, not much has changed.
Well, I think what is good for him is that there won't be that many expectations. I think the fan base was kind of turned off last year. They had such high hopes and it went so wrong that there's not a lot of expectation that they're going to be very good next year. And so I think that kind of gives him a little breathing room and kind of gives the organization a little breathing room to where if these guys do start to perform better and they do have a better season, that they will be exceeding expectations even if they're not winning a division. And that takes a little bit of pressure off of everybody.
Yeah, what's a realistic range here for wins? Like realistic. So 90. So they were, 70 and 92? So what, 78 wins? I mean, what would be like a step in the right direction?
Yeah, they were 69 and 93. So, I mean, if they come close to 500, I think that's a huge step forward for them. But again, you know, they're looking at this window here that they have 2 years left in this window to try to win. So, yeah, they need to take a pretty big step forward this year if this plan's going to work.
Okay, well, it'll be very interesting. Steve, thank you so much. Happy New Year. We'll talk to you in January.
Thanks, Allison. You too.
The 2017 season is still a few months away, but there is a lot of planning going on, getting ready for that. So the San Diego Padres are right in the middle of all of that. Let's talk to A.J. Cassavell about that. I'm Allison Sutter. There was a little bit of Padres news that came out, and that is that Clayton Richard has been re-signed. So what can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it looks like it's a one-year deal similar to the one they gave to Ulysses Chacin over the weekend. Essentially, what they're doing now is trying to trying to bring in some veteran innings eaters to the staff, and Richard certainly fills that role. He's obviously comfortable in San Diego. After they signed him last year, I think his ERA was 2.52. His peripherals weren't that good, but his ground ball rate was as good as any pitcher in baseball with as many innings as him. So he's a useful rotation piece. He's a guy they can stick into one of their five starting jobs and feel fairly confident in. And obviously, he's had some success in San Diego. He's a good clubhouse guy. And I think the most interesting thing about the signing is he's 33, which is almost 4 years older than anyone else on the Padres 40-man roster.
Wow. They're definitely getting younger. It goes without saying, but we've talked about this before, and this speaks to the Chacin signing also, but it's a matter of getting arms in there that can eat up a lot of innings and making this transition until they're more ready to be competitive in the division. So these are kind of smart moves for teams that are in the situation that the Padres are in.
Yeah. And they really like the young offense they have. They're not looking into making too many additions there. I think they'd like a shortstop. They might want some catching depth, but what they were focused on this offseason was bringing in some veteran guys who can kind of help their rotation out a little bit. And they'll kind of proceed forward with the young offense they had. I think a lot of their younger pitching prospects are a couple years away. So they need guys to kind of fill that void and step in. And Clayton Richard and Yuli Chacin are both examples of guys that could do that.
AJ, as we look ahead to 2017, I would say that even though the Padres still have a lot of work to do in terms of being ultra-competitive in the division they're in, this could be a very exciting team for next season with all these prospects that they plan to sort of mix in a little bit. We've talked about it before, but who catches your eye in that whole scenario? What young players are you really looking forward to seeing?
Well, I think one of the biggest question marks for the Padres, I think, going forward just in general is Hunter Renfro in right field. He came up last season and his OPS was something like 1300, and he hit four home runs and I think it was eight games. He hit one on top of the Western Metal Building, which to me was the coolest home run I saw all year. And so he's a guy who clearly has major league power and he clearly can hit. He can hit major league pitching. His question mark has always been, can he stay in the strike zone, or is he, are pitchers going to be able he doesn't walk a whole lot. And I think it's not necessarily a bad thing if you're not super selective when you have that kind of power, because you should be getting pitchers to maybe pitch around you and take your walks that way. But that's not something Hunter Renfro has necessarily done in the minor leagues, and I think that's what he needs to do to take the next step. If he becomes selective, and I'm not talking about like a league leader in walks, I'm just talking about a number four hitter, what you'd expect. If that happens, he could be a legitimate cleanup hitter, kind of RBI guy of the future for the Padres. So he's one guy to watch. Austin Hedges, Manny Margot, there are a couple others. There's a lot of guys on this offense that are, it's going to, like you said, it's going to be a fun season to watch these young guys develop on offense.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of looking forward to Margot. Again, as somebody who's not right in the middle of all this and kind of watching from the outside, but it just seems like he came with sort of such high stock as far as being a pretty good, just seems fast and exciting to watch. I mean, is that legitimate? Like, this could be a good year for him?
Yeah, I think it's going to be it'll be interesting to see whether he makes the big league roster out of camp. He's only 22 years old, but he's going to get significant major league playing time. There's been some chatter about a potential Travis Jankowski trade. If that happens, then he's the Padres center fielder pretty much instantly. He's to me the most exciting of these young guys, at least to watch, because of just how fast he is and how he makes things happen on the bases. And then he plays some elite defense in center field. He covers an unbelievable amount of ground. If the Padres end up going with both Jankowski and Margot in their outfield, Andy Green, I think, joked at the winter meetings that, hey, in that case, maybe we'll just have five infielders and let those two guys roam around out there, because they have that kind of range. They cover so much ground, and to me, that's purely a baseball fan, that's it's fun to watch guys who are athletic like that and have that kind of range. So he brings a lot of tools to the table. I would say probably all four of the five at least. He doesn't have a ton of power, but he's a fun player to watch.
Okay, we will keep our eye on that. Thanks so much, AJ. Appreciate it. We're not too far away from pitchers and catchers reporting to spring training, and there's a lot of things to look forward to when it comes to the Colorado Rockies. So let's talk about that with Thomas Harding. I am Allison Footer. Thomas, you know how I feel about these Rockies. I feel that this is a good, exciting team that is ready to have, have some good days ahead of them. So as you kind of look ahead to spring training, what gives you optimism about this club?
Well, almost everything, actually. I mean, it's one of the better offensive lineups in the National League. They have young starting pitching, and as we've discussed before, it seems to work better when you have guys who come up in your organization to pitch a Coors Field rather than going out and getting guys who pitched elsewhere and suddenly come to a difficult place to pitch. The big question is, can they improve the bullpen, which let them down last year? But in their winning years, the bullpen has been one of the key reasons.
So they don't really want to derail a season by the bullpen not being very good. I mean, that happens with a lot of teams, but how do you see them rectifying that?
I think the biggest way to do that is to have a number of arms that can pitch those late innings. They went out and signed Mike Dunn, who had pitched well with the Marlins for a number of seasons, has a high strikeout rate, a high ground ball rate. Both of those dropped a little bit last year. I mean, he was injured at the start of the year, the first time he'd ever been injured, but his overall numbers look very good. And if he comes back to, if he comes to Coors Field and pitches the way he has in the past, he makes a difference. And I think the rest of it, I do expect them to go out and get another bullpen arm at least, maybe a veteran arm that can pitch the late innings, but they're going to have to expect better from some of the guys that were there in the past. And there's no reason to believe Adam Ottavino won't be better the season after Tommy John surgery. He could emerge as the closer, or a Dunn, or a guy like a Jake McGee, who had a knee injury that hampered him throughout the entire season. If Jake McGee gets back his velocity, then he's a late innings pitcher. They had Carlos Estevez, who I thought pitched well for them until they made him the closer really too soon. He was just a little bit over a year out of Class A ball, and suddenly he was closing big league games. But if you get that group of people, and Jairo Diaz coming off of Tommy John surgery, if all that group kind of meshes together, then they could be a whole lot better in the bullpen.
And they have a new manager who brings with him not only a really nice resume, but he's also a former pitching coach and a former pitcher in Bud Black. So what can we look forward to seeing from him? It seems like this could be a very good pairing between a veteran pitching coach and a veteran manager and a young pitching staff that's really talented.
It could be a great mesh here because Bud Black, he knows pitching. He's managed in the National League West. He's managed a lot of games at Coors Field against the Rockies. And the other thing that I like about Bud Black in this case, you have a relatively young team. You have guys that you're going to have some guys that are getting their footing in the big leagues, like some of the relievers. Bud Black's a very conventional type manager. You're not going to see him do a lot of out of the box things. I mean, if he has a pitcher that can pitch two or three innings, that's fine. But I don't think he's going to try to do what some of the teams in the playoffs did, only try to do it over 162 games. You look back at his career with the San Diego Padres, and he was able to have Trevor Hoffman at the end of the game and really good relievers to set him up. And if he finds that at Coors Field with the Rockies, whether it's Adam Ottavino closing or Mike Dunn or Jake McGee or maybe one of the younger arms, I think that he's going to have a very good team that's going to be on the same page with him. So I like the idea of Bud Black coming in here.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, and I understand that you just conducted an interview with Chad Bettis that we were about to listen to. So what? Give us a preview on that.
I'll tell you what, Chad Bettis is one of the more impressive individuals I've run into in professional baseball, and he had a very rough diagnosis, a diagnosis of testicular cancer. And what happened was he found out about it in November, and by the end of the month he was able to get the cancer removed, and now he's working his way back. And here's what I found interesting is from the diagnosis to the actual operation was a little less than 2 weeks. that time, he armed himself with so much information about the disease and the fact that if caught early, it's very treatable and it doesn't spread. And the fact that he's decided to make it a point to let as many people know as possible, to remind men, hey, if you feel something wrong, if you see something wrong, go ahead and have a check. Take care of your health. And you just, it's like he pitches. I mean, he'll go out and he'll pitch, and then after the game, he'll evaluate everything, and he'll have a plan of action. I mean, you can almost see this guy working in some other industry, whether it's computer software, which is what his parents actually do. You know, they develop computer software businesses, and they had their struggles and triumphs and learned how to be very effective, not just at developing software, but also at being in the business of selling it. And the way that Chad Bettis attacks pitching, and that's the way he's attacking this disease.
All right, good stuff. Okay, let's take a listen. Thank you, Thomas.
So I just recently got off the phone with Pat Graham just a little while ago, and I was talking to him about it. And you know, the more I think about it, the more I feel like baseball has prepared me for something like this. You know, mm-hmm. I think that my whole baseball career, not just as a Rocky, but as a child playing baseball all the way through high school to college to now, you know, there's things that you learn through baseball that you can apply to life, and if you take it in the right way, then you can apply it to almost anything that's happening in your life. And I think you know, it's been such a blessing to be able to be a baseball player and learn so many lessons that I have to be able to apply it to something like this. Because when I first heard out, you know, when I first found out that I had testicular cancer, it wasn't necessarily that. It was the testicular part that stood out. It was more the cancer part, you know. Yeah. And when you hear the word cancer, it's like, excuse me, you know, it's something that's like that I was taken back from it, you know, and it was pretty scary.
Was there any cancer in your family or anything like that?
No, nothing like this. No, and that's the weird thing and odd thing about it is. You know, I don't know enough about that, if it's genetics or anything like that, but there hasn't been anything like this that's been through my family.
Mm-hmm. So if you can kind of take me through how that went, were you, because you said you were taken, you know, you were caught off guard by the diagnosis. Was this just a routine checkup, or were you thinking, gee, something isn't right, or how was that?
No, yeah. So it was okay. I'll run you all the way back through the very beginning. So when I first felt it, it was me that I felt it myself, and it was just a little lump, and it was no bigger than a grain of rice. It wasn't even the size of a pea. And I had found it that night, and I didn't know what to think of it, you know. It was mm-hmm. something that's like, oh, I don't know if this is something that I need to say something about, or maybe it's nothing, or who knows, you know. So I was like, I'll hold off for a little, you know, I'll hold off, and then I'll check again in the morning,
mm-hmm.
and if it's still there in the morning, then I probably should say something. And so, sure enough, I checked in the morning, and it was still there, and then that's when I started that process. So
when was that? What'd you say?
That was I would say that was almost a little over a month ago now. Yeah, and so once I went to go see the doctor, we had gotten an ultrasound, and then we had gotten some blood work done, some lab work, and then once the lab work had came back, it was like, that's kind of when I had been told, and then that I had testicular cancer. And then it was, okay, we want to make sure that it hasn't spread anywhere, so we're going to go get, you know, some scans done and make sure that it hasn't spread anywhere, and then we're going to go from there. And so I met with my urologist Monday. This was 2 weeks ago Monday now. So I'm trying to think. Is the 29th? That sound right?
That was, well, the 29th, I think, was on your, it seems like that was what was mentioned. Yeah, that was when the surgery was, the 29th.
Okay, so the 28th is when I met with the urologist. that Monday. And so when I met with him Monday, he was saying that basically surgery is kind of our first option here, and then we go from there. And the fact that it doesn't look like it has spread anywhere, that we, you know, surgery is our first option. And I was thinking, okay, you know, maybe it's going to be a couple weeks before I get into surgery. Okay, like, you know, what does this look like? This is, like, we need to get this process going.
Mm-hmm.
And he came back into the room and said, just to let you know, if you want to do this tomorrow, we can, because one of my other patients just canceled on me. And right when he said that, I knew that it was a blessing. You know, it was, let's go ahead and get this out of me tomorrow, you know,
yeah.
So I don't have to worry about this anymore.
How long does a surgery like that take? How many hours, or is it minutes? Or were you?
I imagine
you were asleep throughout it.
Oh yeah, I was. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
no, it was the surgery itself was 45 minutes long, but
okay.
You know, with the paperwork and everything, and then coming out of the anesthesia was probably 4 or 5 hours, maybe.
I would imagine that would be the scariest moment, wouldn't it?
Oh yeah, you know, I mean, it's you know, you don't know necessarily if it's spread or what stage it's in or anything like that, and so you're kind of just in limbo, you know, and it's, you're praying for the best, you're hoping for the best, and you know, I, like I said, you know, when they said I had testicular cancer, it wasn't something that I was like, oh yeah, the testicular part, okay, perfect, like, this is okay, this is gonna be okay, you know, it was the cancer, it was,
yes.
When you hear that word, it's, I was caught off guard, you know, and like I said, it's something that I think, you know, obviously the earlier you can get to it, the better, you know, and it was a blessing that we caught it so early.
And I guess that's one of the things that certainly I'm guilty of, is that when something is wrong, immediately say, not minimizing it, saying, okay, maybe this is abnormal. I guess that's the thing that we men have to do, right? Just if there is something, you don't tough your way through it if you think it could be something.
No, yeah, I think you know, if that's where I was in between, you know, there for the 8 to 12 hour window from when I found it to the next morning, and then saying something. It was, you know, do I say something? Is this really anything? Probably not, but maybe I should say something. You know, it's the fact that, you know, it's easy enough for us to just be aware of. It's easy.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy. We can check ourselves, you know, we can be aware of what's going on, and it's not something, you know, that you have to be afraid of, really, you know. This is something that's, the more I did research, the more we found out about it, the more I understood that this is very highly curable, but at the same time, you want to catch this early.
Mm-hmm. So, I guess, when did you do all this research? That's, was it in between them telling?
It was in between the time I had gotten my blood work to the time of surgery, essentially. So a 10-day window, give or take.
10-day window?
Yeah.
Okay, so you saw the urologist on the 28th, but they had already caught this a few days before, right?
Correct.
Yeah,
right,
okay.
right. So the whole process of getting ultrasound, my lab work, my CT scan, that took almost it took about 2 weeks.
Okay.
To do all of that. And then Monday is when I saw the urologist on the 28th, and then 29th I had surgery.
Of course, this is something you normally don't hear about, but this was... Were you still, like, working out and doing all this stuff during that time, or did you feel like, hey, I can't go to the facility? Or did you end up going to the facility just to, you know, not lose your mind on it?
Yeah, no, I did. I went to go work out every day until surgery day. You know, it was something that I needed to, you know, kind of clear my mind and see my brothers and family up there and you know, kind of get away from this for a little while and you know, reset.
Did your teammates and all know about it, or was it something you kept quiet, or how did you?
Yeah, they didn't. Nobody knew about it, except the people that needed to know about it until I released it.
I would imagine that's kind of tough being around the guys you work out with every day, and you got this thing.
Yeah, it is, and it is tough. You know, I mean, it's. That's why, you know, I felt like it was appropriate to make a statement and release it at the time that I did, because it was getting exhausting keeping it quiet from everybody, and people, you know, my brother's asking me, like, hey, where are you? You doing all right? You know, is everything good? And it's like, oh, man. Like,
yeah, because I'm working
to tell you, but I can't yet, you know?
Yeah, because it was 2 weeks. So for those 2 weeks, I imagine you were recovering. Did you just say, you know, I'm taking a break from throwing? I mean, how did you?
I just stayed at home. I stayed at home for 2 weeks. I went up to the field one time. And you know, people were asking me what's going on and stuff, and I told them that, you know, I was dealing with some family stuff, and for me to lie to my teammates is that's something I don't like to do.
I understand that, but you know, you got to have some privacy, right?
Yeah.
So this comes out on ESPN. What made you decide to go ahead and release the statement, and what were the mechanisms to make that happen?
For me, it was that, you know, this needs to be known that, you know, that this can happen to anybody, and that if you can catch it early, that you're ahead of the game, you know, and that even though that this is very highly curable, that it still needs to be detected early. And for me, it was getting the word out there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's something that can happen to anybody, and it's going to be okay. And you know, we're in this together, and it's, you know, we'll be better from it. And you know, the earlier you catch it, the better off you are. And so that's kind of from you know, that's why I wanted to release the statement. That's kind of what I wanted my statement to. You know, that's why I wanted to word it the way I did, so that people are aware of this, and that it is, it's going to be okay, but we need to be aware of what's going on. You can check yourself, you know, it's not something that you have to go to a doctor's office or anything for. And if you feel something, or if you think something's a little off, then it's okay to say something.
Yeah, so since then, tell me what the reaction has been. I mean, I've seen a lot of fans online. I think one of your teammates, Hoffman, put out something. What were your thoughts? What have your thoughts been since this actually happened?
It's been so overwhelming with the support that my family and I have gotten from everybody across the country. It's been overwhelming. I can't speak enough about how kind and how much love and support we feel from everybody. You know, it's been unbelievable.
What about the teammates? Have they been coming by and calling and reading your, blowing up your text? Like,
You know, everybody, after the statement had come out, you know, everybody, the guys that were out of town texted me, and the guys that were here, you know, I saw it up at the field, and I got to talk to them for a little bit. But you know, it's just, like I said, it's been so overwhelming with love, especially from my teammates. It's been something that's, you know, I couldn't imagine. You know, it's a great amount of support that I have.
As far as the recovery is concerned, where are you in that?
So today was my fourth day of doing some rehab, just in the pool work and stuff. I've got another round of lab work to do next week to make sure everything's good, and then we're off for the holidays to go see family and friends. And I'm gonna keep working out, just like body weight stuff over that period of time, and then when we come back January 1st or 2nd, whenever that Monday is, start throwing and get back into shape here.
Had you started throwing?
I had thrown, I was throwing a little bit before my surgery.
Had you started throwing before the diagnosis, or did you pick up the ball when you knew this was going on?
I was throwing a little bit. I was throwing before it a little bit, but I threw a couple times through it.
The picture that you put up with your wife here, a beautiful picture mm-hmm. that's gotten a lot of reaction. Was that taken after the surgery, and was this in Scottsdale? Where was this?
Yeah, this was in Scottsdale, just at a restaurant. It was last week. It was last week, last Saturday. And it was just something that, it was a picture of us, and after my statement with all the support that my wife and I and expecting baby girl on the way, the support that we had gotten from everybody, it was just overwhelming. And so it was something that I felt like, I needed to share and give back a little bit to just say that, everything's going to be okay, and we really appreciate all the support that we've gotten.
So when is the baby girl coming?
She's coming March 29th.
Wow, right before the regular season, so.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So when you, I guess, that's been, since that picture came out, do you feel like maybe some of the reaction that you get is a little less fearful? It's almost like, hey, Chad Bettis is doing well, but it's nice to actually see him doing well.
I think it's something that, that, like I said, it is scary. It is something that is, a little frightening even, especially, like I said, when you hear those two words, you hear the cancer more than you hear the testicular part.
Right.
And, but I think, my outlook on this is that, something good has to come from this, and whether that be a foundation or a spokesperson or however, to raise more awareness, to understand that men around our country it's okay to check, and it's okay if you say something, because early detection is better than not saying anything at all. And that's kind of, I feel like that's kind of how I've been approaching this.
And was it the stage one or early stage, or where did
it's stage one, yes.
Okay, yeah, because I know that, I guess, most people, a lot of people don't catch it until a lot later, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, this is really interesting because, last year about this time, I think it was Jack Corrigan, the radio announcer, with the prostate cancer, and he's been kind of out there doing things. Have you had much, I know he tweeted a lot of support. Have you had much contact with him on it?
He actually reached out to me a couple of days after I had released my statement. And, it was just, like I said, just he was giving me, some very kind words and his support and understanding that, everything's going to be okay. And that if I ever need anything, or if I just need to talk to him about, stuff, that just to give him a ring. It's like I said, my wife and I, we've been so overwhelmed with all the support that we've been getting over the past week now. It's been great.
Are there further treatments, or are you, I guess if you pass the clean bill of health on, when is it, Monday, that, this is just out of your body, done, and you just go on? How does this work?
Oh, yeah, so there's, some more lab work to do this next week, and if all the tumor markers normalize or go to non-existent, then how we're going to approach it is just to be very proactive, and get blood work regularly, get scans regularly, and make sure that everything is staying where it needs to. But if the
tumor markers come back in a different way, and we don't necessarily like the you know, what they're showing or whatever, then we might, you know, need to take a different direction to our approach.
As far as in the grand scheme of things, baseball is kind of secondary here, but has this delayed you to the point that you're, you know, that maybe you'll be delayed going into the season, even if everything's okay, or?
I mean, unless something drastically happens over here over the next week when I get some more lab work done, that there shouldn't be any major setback in the big scheme of things here. I was able to work out up until the day of surgery. Mm-hmm. So if anything, I've missed 2 weeks of lifting, if that, you know, 8 days really, because we're only working out 4 days a week, right? Or I am only working out 4 days a week up to that point. So mm-hmm. 8 days really is not, you know, going to make or break.
Yeah.
I think it's something that we're very optimistic and understanding that if everything goes well, then I should be ready to go by spring training.
And do you take it a little bit easier in spring training than maybe past years, or do you want to do it exactly the way where you're pitching the first go-round there and, you know, throwing that early two-inning thing?
No, you know, I think honestly, I would like to approach it over how I've approached it in the last 2 years, where I actually don't get out there until three or four innings and, you know,
right,
kind of be in the back and still working on stuff, to be a little bit more deliberate. So, you know, I'm ready to go for the season, not necessarily for spring training.
Well, man, I am very happy for you, and obviously we're all pulling for you. So thanks for talking to me. I know that you're probably having to do a lot of these right now, and
no,
I'm glad you were
fine.
Able
you're
to
fine.
Take your time and, you know, do it on your time. So. That's perfect.
Yeah, of course. No worries. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks so much, and I will be seeing you soon, okay?
The new year is upon us, and even though opening day is a little ways away, it's never too early to start talking about what we can expect from the 2017 season. Let's talk about the Dodgers with Ken Gernick. I'm Allison Fitter. Ken, things look pretty optimistic, I would think, for the Dodgers, just in terms of keeping the band together. They really were able to obtain some key players, and that should, I guess, bode well for them in this upcoming season.
Well, they're no worse than they were, I guess. You know, you could make the argument they're no better than they were either. So, yeah, it's kind of the status quo. And I guess from the Dodgers' standpoint, of course, there's still several months to improve the team before the season starts. But from their perspective, you know, if they get any kind of luck with injuries and they have some of these players out on the field longer than they had them in 2016, then you hope for some improvement.
Yeah, I think holding on to Kenley Jansen probably, I don't know, I'm trying to think what the most significant thing is, and I guess you can't really handicap that at this point. But being able to retain key players at positions where it's hard to replenish that. And like we've talked about, I think they may have learned a little bit of a lesson with Zach Greinke. Like, you just can't, you know, you just can't fill holes so easily in some areas. So I would think that just having the closing situation locked down has to make them feel pretty good at this point.
Yeah, you know, they pretty much overpaid for all three of their big free agents, it seems like. You know, you got Rich Hill, who's got an injury history, and 5 years for a closer, that's not like anything that Andrew Friedman's ever done before. And even Justin Turner, as well as he's played the last 3 years, there really didn't seem to be a market. The Dodgers are almost bidding against themselves there. But, you know, all three of those guys were kind of key performers, especially Jansen, who has been really since he showed up as a rookie. So, you know, they sure haven't gotten any worse than they were last year by retaining those guys. So they're all three of them were key players. You know, whether they've improved themselves, you know, it's hard to make the argument they've improved themselves. Really, they haven't changed their roster that much. But there's still time left for that.
Yeah, if there's any area you think that they, you know, might still be active and maybe signing somebody, maybe trading for somebody, I mean, what's left?
Well, what's left really is a right-handed hitting second baseman. That would solve two problems, because they don't have an everyday second baseman, and they need another right-handed bat. And that's why Brian Dozier's name keeps popping up, and Logan Forsythe, and Ian Kinsler. And so you see some names out there that they very well could trade for. There's several of them out there. They could always match things up things together in a platoon. They would prefer to make a trade for one of those three players, and it wouldn't be a surprise before the season starts if they did.
Okay. All right. Ken, thank you so much. Happy New Year to you. We will talk to you in January.
MLB.TV Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.TV Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.TV for details.